Welcome to the Book a Week podcast, jointly hosted by the SEPT University Library and the Center for Research on Architecture and Urbanism.
Welcome everyone for the listeners who are listening to this podcast of Book a Week. Today we have author, writer Vasudendra Shroff joining us from Bangalore. And Vasudendra is a writer in Kannada primarily, and a lot of his works have been translated in English. What we will be discussing today is his book, The Unforgiving City, which is a collection of short stories, about 12 short stories written in various times and collected as a kind of a book under the title Unforgiving City. Welcome, Vasudendra, to the podcast. So before we kind of begin, I wanted to situate the book for its importance that maybe some architects and urbanists might find, particularly because at least in the last couple of decades, the profession has seen an interesting turn in the methodology of approaching the city itself. So before that, let's say under the guise of planning and under the guise of urban design, where problem solving was the only way of addressing and looking at the city, particularly after the 91 transformation of India, to make sense of this changing and ever evolving, let's say, transformation of cities in India, urbanists kind of have taken and still do a method of almost serial description of the reality that they're facing, failing to make sense of what actually is happening. And your book, The Unforgiving City, also captures those transformations very interestingly, anchored in places like Bellary, which I have learned that it is your hometown, and Bangalore, where you've kind of situated yourself for work. So which kind of tells very interesting transformation stories of anchoring themselves in specific places, but also having a sense of larger global changes that are taking place, but also national changes that are taking place. You also kind of navigate into Andhra, Telangana belt also because it's close to Bellary. So in that sense, it's a very fascinating way as an urbanist also to kind of see the method that you kind of deploy to write these stories. So in that sense, the first, let's say the thing that I should ask you, if you could tell a few words about, let's say, the book itself to the listeners.
See, it's thank you for inviting me. And also I had come recently to Ahmedabad, to Ahmedabad University. So I have vivid memories of Ahmedabad. This book, originally in Kannada, it's called as Hampi Express. Hampi Express is a train which connects my native, that is Bellary. So Hampi, and it connects Bangalore. So the journey of anybody who goes through this train is what I mean, actually, the Hampi Express. And also, I call it as like umbilical cord. I call this train as an umbilical cord of my native and Bangalore. Okay, it supplies the food, yeah, which is required for a life between both the places, there to here, here to there as well. So that's what was the intention. It was dedicated to the train. It's like my journey. So I come from a small town. City looks very different for a person who comes from a countryside. In the beginning, it scares you. It scares you so much that it starts bringing you inferiority complex, especially for people like me who come from native places, who do not have good English speaking skills. You know, our communication skills in English will be pretty weak, and we are strong in our native languages. That used to bring down your confidence, and it used to hide your talent. You know, it never used to allow to express your talent, what you are. So that was the initial problem. But it had some other advantages for me. The one most advantage is anonymity. I was like, nobody cares what I am doing. Not even my neighbor, who is worried about whom I am bringing in or whom I am going with. Nobody worries. In my place, Everyone, entire village will be worried about whom I am talking to, what I am talking to, what is happening in my... That kind of a freedom you get in a city is something like a bliss for most of the people who come from the villages. And also the opportunities were so high. We haven't seen so much of opportunity. And you get a feeling that maybe one day you will also become like one of them, you know. So that is the positive side of it also. Right. And, you know, like there are thumb rules in my childhood, innocent days. For me, the thumb rule to think that it's a city is big or small, right? Yeah. So what I used to do is I used to ask how many cinema theaters are there in your city. So if there are very less film theaters in you, this thing, so you are a smaller city. So you are of useless, you know. If there are big number of cities, like then theaters, cinema theaters, then it's a big one. So like I'm talking about 1980s, 80s time. You know, like, and in Bangalore, only in Majestic area, there were 100 theaters. Unbelievably, all have been demolished now. Those days, it was so many. Every few meters of walking, you find another new theater. And complexes of theater, 4 theaters, 5 theaters.
Oh, wow.
Like, oh my goodness, it's so big city and all. Now, that thumb rule doesn't work at all. Okay. This thumb rules is something which is always I'm passionate about, you know. So I travel abroad a lot. I worked across the globe. So whenever I see a city where the size of a woman's toilet is same as that of a men's toilet in the public places, in railway stations, I feel that country is progressive. It's like they have women is also traveling in equal quantity numbers as much as men, means it's definitely a progressive country. Look at India, most of the cities the woman toilet room is smaller compared to the men's toilet room. It definitely shows me this city, this country is patriotic in its attitude.
In fact, there is something called as a national building code, in which there is a proportion that gets assigned to, let's say, a public toilet for men and women. So it's never technically 50-50. Because it's the assumption is that more men would work.
Maybe their proportion might be right. It's a pragmatic. It's practical. But the mentality is not right. You know, like now, in what happened in Karnataka, the new government, the Congress government, which came, which allowed women to travel free in all the government buses within the state.
Right.
Now the buses are flooded with women. Right. And the toilets are not
sufficient.
Women are complaining that toilets are not enough for them, so they need more toilet space. This is something which makes me happy about city. But observing this city space and what is going on is a fascinating thing for me.
So one of the things that I've read before is a book called Samskara by Anant Murthy.
Yeah, Anant Murthy.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of the tonality of your book, at least in terms of how they start the stories and situate themselves in a strange situations, have that kind of an undertone and overtones to those things. Would that be fair, let's say.
Yeah, in the beginning, like, because similar to him, and it's a compliment when you say it is from Anant Murthy, because we consider Anant Murthy language and his intellect is the highest on topmost in Kannada literature. So he's too good at it, and so that influence will be there. So when it's like this, you see, when a kid is born at the family, we start identifying that, okay, the nose is like his mother, the eyes are like his father, and all, like, we recognize, right? For us authors, it's the same thing. When we write our first book, you can easily recognize, start writing. So here is Anant Murthy, here is S.L. Veerappa, here is Masti Venkatesh Iyengar, and it's a pride thing.
So maybe to stick to, let's say, within the realm of for architects, urbanist interest, the first story itself where, let's say, there's a financial crisis and there's this couple, one migrated from Bihar, the other guy is from Bangalore.
No, he's from Maharashtra. Maharashtra had taken,
And then they kind of overstretch themselves in buying expensive properties, going on vacation. Then she gets also pregnant, and then, you know, all of those things. So, and there's a predicament of how urban life can sometimes be cruel, but also what is interesting is that you're folding in aspirational dimensions also within, let's say, personal life. So can you, do you want to say something about that story? Like what was the inspiration?
See what happened. In fact, I'd seen the case in my office, in my software life. I've seen that incident happening. But I have observed most of the HR suggest us don't take women who are having plans of becoming pregnant soon. Are getting married and becoming pregnant, because they will become a problem in the project. Right? So that was hurting me, actually. It was hurting me, and it went. So once it happened in such a way that she was, so much pressure they put it on her that she has to resign, you know. But the other part is, right, when this city was growing, like people started buying lands as a weekend affair. You know, like, every weekend they will go in search of the new plot and new site, what they can buy. Because banks started giving loan, I'm talking about early 2000s, okay? Yeah. So everyone goes and loan is there, few salaries there, pay the EMI and get the land so that it will become big. But once the 2008 recession came, everyone realized what is the damage which is happening. See, what happens is, whether it's a recession, whether it's a war, whether it is a pandemic, the first person who gets affected is woman. So I wanted to capture that, how woman suffers because of these calamities, and also the greediness which gets created artificially and makes you to buy without even thinking, you know, like so much of wealth you start buying without realizing whether it's needed or not, actually. So that's something. In fact, the one more thumb rule, I'll come to another thumb rule, which is very shocking for me, is when someone like a customer came all the way from Denmark to my company. He has come from Denmark. He hasn't heard about Bangalore at all. So, and I, within the second day, he's asking me, I want to buy a property in this place. I asked him, so why do you want to buy in this place? What is the point of it? Why are you planning to buy? So then he told me, I just didn't know that, like, this city is progressing, he said. It is in 96, 97 kind of a period. Okay, 97, like a beginning. I asked him, how do you tell that you have come just yesterday and you have not heard of the city? What makes you to tell that the city is going to progress? He said, there's a lot of construction is going on in the city. I saw while coming from the airport, there's so much of construction, active construction. It's not abandoned construction buildings. There are active constructions are going on in the city. So this is going to grow. So that's what he said, and he was keen to buy the property. Then I realized, maybe, my goodness, like, if it is some another part of the country and you are trying to invest here, I said, what do you do with the land here? He says, don't even worry about one full house. They have he only introduced me to a share business where, if it's a big city and there is a major property, people will buy part of that property. Think of it like you are holding a small piece of a house, and that you are considering it as a money. There's no attachment, there is no love, money, which was shocking to me as an author.
This, like, I think mobility upward, social upward mobility is really linked with how many houses you're changing. Like in my own case, I remember, like, of course, because my father moved from a village to a city, not a big city, but a small city. And then we lived in a rented house. Then he became a civil engineer. So he built an apartment complex. Then he got one house for himself. And then I think in 10, 15 years, he moved to another house because he wanted a bigger house. So I think I get what you're saying, but I think what happens is that this some in some sense, like you pointed out, people start associating their worth with, let's say, what kind of house that they start to live in eventually. Sticking to the question of housing, we can go to the last chapter, perhaps, which is also called The Unforgiving City. And I think the premise is that there is this new housing society with 500 apartments. I think this was the early 2000s. And like you mentioned, there was the first signs of social media was emerging. So I want to point the story. I'll let you kind of speak more about it. But can you maybe kind of tell where did you kind of find that situation or that inspiration for that?
What happens is I was always wondering why stress levels are very high in city when compared to my area, my rural area. The stress levels are very high in city. So then I started realizing that it's because in city we don't forgive. We define our way, right? So this is the way a modern person has to live, a cultured, educated person has to live. So that becomes so harsh that you will not forgive the other person. This non-forgiveness brings you the stress. These stresses get culminated at one point and crime starts happening. I come to apartment in 2000, actually. I purchased this apartment in 2000. That was brand new at that time. Nobody knew what an apartment, how to live and also because Bangalore, especially Karnataka, never increased apartment culture. And also Bangalore can grow in all the 360 degree, you know, so like directions, anywhere it can grow on its own. So there was no need for apartment. Maybe because of the cost, this thing. So as cities started progressing, so they started bringing the apartment culture. So then it's pretty new for it. In my apartment, like I could see that people get so offended even for a small mistake. Small mistake, they get offended, you know, immediately they, especially in virtual media, you know, when you are in face to face, you are really a little bit better. Well, you will be polite and you accept the person. But if you are on the visual digital media, you can hurt other person very easily. So I could see that's what was happening in Bangalore also. That's what I started seeing in the Yahoo group and all. And once when there was a small girl, actually 3-4 years girl, she pissed in the pool, it's a swimming pool. It became such a big issue of discussion. Everyone starts giving suggestion to that mother. Everyone wants to raise their hand and say, yeah, we are uncomfortable with it and all. Like that's something. In a village, there is a lake. Everyone swims there. We don't know what's going to happen there, right? Even buffaloes come and take bath there and we know how they will be. But still, people can accommodate. But city, they can't accommodate the errors of another person. That's what I wanted to bring in that story. But I've spoken very negatively about the metro, but I would like to talk about something on positive side also of the city, which is very important for me. So one thing I said, the anonymity, the reason why I'm using this anonymity is because of my sexuality. I'm a gay man, okay? So I was in closet in my college days, during in my village life every time. But once I came to the city, started living here, I felt it's such a nice place, relieving place. There are so many people like me, so I can meet them and I can go them, I can bring them home and I can live the way I want with nobody ask, you know, for them. So that you won't get it anywhere else. Nobody asks me why you are not married. I'm a single and I'm unmarried. I'm bachelor still. Nobody asks me that question here. Everyone is happy. They live whatever the way you are, so they're okay with it. Nobody talks about that. So those things were pretty good in the city. And also compared to the countryside, my city is less casteist.
So I was, I had two like remaining points. One was like to ask about your methods.
A fiction writer should never document anything. If you document, you will be constrained by the realistic details of the incident.
Right.
What should happen is it should register in your mind and it should develop on its own to the various shapes. If it's a strong story, it will grow day by day.
Right.
A weak story, it means weak note which you have made, it will disappear within few days. So you know the strength of it. So when you have all those observed points, you know, so that makes you the story. Whole storytelling is power of imagination.
Correct.
Don't stunt it. You are stunting it by writing a points on that one. For me, be open and listen and observe. See, what happens is when we go for any new place, we have a habit of grasping that thing only with the eyes.
Correct.
We assume that eye is the most powerful organ of all our bodies. You know, you should grasp a place with all the five senses, right? You should hear the kind of a sound which is giving. You should smell what is the air like. What is the, you have to taste the air. Is it sweet? Is it other thing? So everything, even sparsha, the touch is also equally important. What kind of touch you have there and all. In fact, actual thing is, as an author, what you need to do is be alert with all your sense organs, all the five, not just one.
So do you usually write in one stretch a story, or
if it is short story, I will, one stretch is enough. Maybe some of the short stories are 10,000 words, 12,000 words, like that. Yeah. I write fixed stories actually. Then I might take a 2-3, but generally it would have, I form the story before sitting in front of the table. I'll form. I'm like an engineer, you know, like engineers have the habit of planning, designing, then the construction and the testing, right? I follow that phase. Testing means, in stories means, the initial readers will be there. Your 4-5 readers will read it and tell whether it's good or not. So those are the things which I will do. Bug fixing. When he tests and he sees any bugs in it, so you have to fix it. So I'm a typical engineer, actually, which many of them don't like me because of that. Right. Like, it's not engineering, it's an art.
So last question, Vasudhendra, like, what is the project that you're working on now? What is the next?
Okay, see, my previous project was on the common man struggle in 15th and 16th century in Portuguese and Vijayanagara. That is my area. That's a big hit here in Canada. So within 2-3 years, it has seen 15 reprints. And it has come in English. Penguin India has published that. So how did the Portuguese common man live during that period? And how did the common man in Vijayanagara live without touching the kings and queens? So don't touch them. Talk about the common man's life and how they lived and what was the impact of the big decisions taken by the people of kings and these travelers and all. So what was it impacting a common man? So that's what I have written. And the second one now I'm working on is from past 3-4 years I'm working on is on the Silk Route.
Nice.
From China to Italy, so Rome, you know, like a Silk Route where India has played a major role.
Right.
But if you look at the history of India, it's always China was friend of us, you know. Friends of China, they used to respect India so much because Buddhism has come from India. So much of respect was there for India. Every visitor has called India as a great country during that period. And we have taken so much inventions of China in our culture. Kalidasa calls it as silk as the Chini Dukula.
Right.
So we have taken a lot from them, including the paper, including the this thing, block printing, you name it. So such a great friends we were, and now the terms have changed. Actually, it's the whole thing where each other acting as an enemy. So I want to handle the relationship between China and India, how it was, and how could someone walk 10,000 miles all along the desert just to come to our country, you know, Boyan who had come in the 7th. What was the kind of a beliefs they had on India? How did it make them to come all the way? So those are the fascinating things for me. And also, so because we're talking about the cities, we need to talk about cities. They were such important cities, you know, like all Samarkand or the other on the Taklamakan desert. There were so many cities, and those cities got submerged under the sand. So today it might be a big city, and tomorrow even a trace of it may not be there.
Correct.
Have in Hindu philosophy, you know, Srishti, Sthiti, Laya. So that you need to think of all the three when you are constructing a city. Don't spend your time only in Srishti and Sthiti. So that means creating and maintaining only we are bothering about. But we need to think of Laya. The work of Ishvara is Laya. Laya Karta. He is the Laya Karta. Means he should demolish it peacefully. Without difficulty. You know, demolition also we need to think of it when we are building a city.
Fantastic. On that note, I think we can stop. Thank you so much. And it was lovely chatting with you.
Talking to you. You are a very good listener. It's a very lovely session I had with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah. Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye.
Hope you enjoyed this episode. Do not miss to like, share, and subscribe to our podcast. Available on all your favorite podcast apps.